Welcome to Pop and Play, the award-winning podcast, still winning so many awards.
Wow, all we do is win, win, win.
The award-winning podcast all about play in its many forms, silliest forms, serious forms, and even powerful forms. I'm your co-host, Nathan Holbert.
And I'm Haney Yoon. We are two educational researchers that figured it might be fun doing something other than write articles that no one will read.
People read all of my articles. They're huge. Huge.
Okay. You keep telling yourself that. So each week we chat with other scholars whose articles do get read. Artists, right. Activists, parents, and children about the significance and value of play in their lives.
And in this season, we've been exploring what it means to play roles, whether we're talking about role-playing or playing roles in games, craft, theater. What's it all about? What compels us to try out these new identities and engage in these spaces?
And today, we're talking about immersive theater. How do you design opportunities to invite others to take on roles? And what are the techniques and systems used to tell a story in an immersive way?
Yeah, that is still in some ways a mystery to me. And I'm excited to talk to our guest today, Kara Murphy, who is a real expert and professional at creating immersive experiences. You and I have been, in preparation not just for this episode, but for the whole season, on a journey.
Yes. A journey is correct.
A real quest to experience and understand immersive theater, right?
Yes.
We've done multiple things, but the two largest examples, the two most expensive things that we've done.
Yes.
To explore immersive theater. Is first of all the Star Wars Galactic Star Cruiser experience, which we'll talk about a little today with our guest Kara Murphy, who was instrumental in designing it. But the other immersive theater experience that we did together was Sleep No More. Let me say a bit about Sleep No More because I think there's an interesting contrast here, right?
Yes.
So Sleep No More is a immersive theater experience that's been running for many years in New York City. It's essentially the story of Macbeth. It is modern dance. And it is an immersive theater experience where the story is unfolding across five floors of a hotel. And you, the audience member, wanders through and you encounter the actors. You see the story unfold. You see it unfold in little snippets. You see it unfold oftentimes out of order, right? And you choose whether or not you're going to stick around on one floor, whether you're going to follow an actor all over the place, whether you're going to just sort of jump around on your own. And so over time, you kind of encounter different bits of this story over the course of 2 hours. And at the end, you're probably left with, what the hell did I just see? Mm-hmm. And then you talk to your friends who also went to it and they say, well, I saw this crazy thing. You say, oh my God, I missed that. I saw this crazy thing. And they say, oh my God, I missed that. Mm. And then you kind of together piece together bits of the story.
Yes. Right. I don't know. What was your experience like?
I had fun. I thought it was weird.
That tracks.
I always have fun. I'm so easy. I'm such an easy audience member. I really, really am. As I said, I did enjoy it. But I think the thing that is fascinating to me is the way in which this is immersive theater, but us, the theater goers, are not impacting the scenes at all.
Mm.
We are purely choosing what to see, when to see it. Mm. Sometimes we're choosing it on accident, right?
Mm.
But I thought that was really interesting. And I think I don't know what to make of that. I don't know if I would have preferred for them to say like, okay, you're supposed to be here at this time, then you're supposed to be there at this other time. So you can kind of piece it together.
Mm-hmm.
Or if I like the serendipity. But like it was a positive experience for me, but it was also like very confusing.
Yeah. So let me ask you an honest question.
Yeah.
Okay. So did the immersive part of it, and to me it meant putting on a mask and walking around and deciding where you were going to go. Was like the skeptical part of me can't help but think, oh, that's cute. It seems like a little bit of a gimmick, right? And would I have enjoyed the experience more if I just got to sit down in a seat and watch a really well-produced version, contemporary version of Macbeth that told me this story and got me into it, right? Like what's the difference between those two experiences?
Yeah.
And did this particular experience help you get into the story a lot more than if you sat down in a theater and watched it?
Was the gimmick worth it?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think yes. I don't think seeing the scenes out of order mattered to me.
Okay.
But I think being in the set and being invited to explore it, to investigate, to poke my head around a corner. Mm. That was very cool. I think it was you who mentioned this. They saw somebody else looking at books and looking at notes.
Oh, I did.
Was this you? Yeah. And then you're like, oh, I should
open things.
I should open things. Yeah. Like, that's cool to me. Yeah, like the fact that you get to actually dig around in the set.
Yeah. That was an epiphany because, you know, I struggled with what do I do here? What am I supposed to do? What am I allowed to do? Because deep down inside, I am kind of a rule follower. So I was like, I don't know what the rules are.
Yeah.
I saw someone opening up a suitcase, I think. And I was like, oh, I guess you could open things. So then I went through this whole quest on this one floor where I literally opened everything. I was like, open this drawer, open this case, open this, whatever. So I was doing that. And I went into a bedroom that was like, it seemed like a child's bedroom. So I went in there and I was like, oh, I'm just going to open everything here. And I was the only person there.
The drawers.
So I'm like opening everything, having a good old time. This lady comes panting and screaming. And she's like, obviously an actress, pregnant. And she's like, and then she like jumps on the bed that I was like right next to. And I'm like, what's happening right now? And then so she's in the bed, she's like writhing in pain. And then all these people start coming into the room.
Right, and they all follow.
Right. Yeah. And I was like, oh, this is kind of cool. I was already here.
And those are small rooms. So you were like right next to her.
I was like right next to her. I did not know what to do.
Yeah.
And then I got really invested in following her. And the thing is, like, if I could really follow her the whole time, that would have been amazing.
Yeah.
But I couldn't.
Nope.
Because it just, she got lost somewhere.
Too many people. Sometimes they also like lose you on purpose so that you have to go somewhere else. But
So I think that was a little bit hard for me because I really enjoy and appreciate a story. I think that's why I like, you know, I like the theater experience. I like, you know, watching movies sometimes. I feel like even in reality television, I love it, but I like the story that's unfolding in front of me. I like being like, I'm really interested in this character because they've developed over time, right? And I felt like for me, that was the part that was missing, is I didn't feel connected to the story, the character, the plays, like anything, right? I didn't even know if there was a plot. I was like, I don't know. I could guess maybe there's something happening in this insane asylum, but there could also be nothing happening here. I don't know. There could be all these bathtubs here for no reason.
Just a room full of tubs.
Yeah. So I didn't feel an affinity or connection to it. And I think that's sometimes my struggle in these immersive experiences is I think it's great. I tried it. I'll give it a college try. But I also feel
the
like
old college try.
I feel disconnected.
Yeah. So that raises a lot of important questions for us. Like, what is the role of the designers to communicate to the audience how to play? Yes, people imagine and people play roles as a kid. We've talked about that. But like, immersive theater is not a normal experience.
Right.
And so how do you communicate to the audience, the players, how to play in this space?
Right.
So let's talk to Carol. Let's talk to an expert.
Sounds great.
Great. Today, I am very excited to welcome our guest, Caro Murphy, to Pop and Play to talk about immersive theater. Caro is an experienced designer currently on faculty at Northeastern University. And in their former life, they were an immersive experience director at Disney's Galactic Star Cruiser, the Star Wars cruise. It's not quite a cruise, but it's still Star Wars down in Florida. So very excited to have you. Welcome, Caro.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Well, as I already said, we're excited to have you, so.
I'm excited. Are you excited? All excited.
So much excitement.
Triply excited.
You don't want to be in this room. It's electrifying.
It is.
Coming in hot. So we're going to talk with you about immersive theater today and your many experiences in that. But before we dive into immersive theater, we like to start with a game. We like to just kind of loosen ourselves up and make sure those conversations are pure and deep. But today I've decided to create a game that is sort of adjacent to immersive theater. And that is something like a text-based adventure game.
Cool.
Did you ever play those back in the day?
Yes, of course.
What are text-based adventure games?
We don't have time for this, Haney.
No. Yes, we do. Please like, explain yourself.
You know, the one that I always think of is Zork. Zork. You know, you turn on your text. It's all text, no images, and it sort of says, you're in a room. To the north is a forest. you know, to the east is a White House with a picket fence. And then you sort of type in go north or examine, you know, fence, that kind of thing.
Got it.
And you move from scene to scene and you have an adventure.
Thank you for explaining that to me, Nathan.
So I've in collaboration with ChatGPT, I needed to use a little AI to help me on this.
Amazing.
Shout out to ChatGPT.
Shout out to our good friend.
Our good friend.
So we have together developed this this little text-based adventure game. It's not very long, but what I'm going to do is I'm going to, you know, set the scene for you.
Awesome.
And give you a few choices. And then if you could kind of talk through your decision-making process and then eventually make a choice, then we'll move on to the next scene. Does that sound good?
Yeah, that sounds great.
Okay. So, opening scene. You stand in a grand hall with three distinct and open doors before you. Each door seems to lead to a vastly different world. A brightly colored door with parrots and treasure maps etched on it. You smell the sea air and hear the sound of explosions and metal clashing. The second door is a dark, slightly ajar door with eerie sounds seeping through. The air passing through the door feels wet and smells old. And the third door, a heavy wooden door with a grand crest and torches on either side. You smell horse manure.
Awesome.
Which door would you like to check out?
I'm going in the second door because I love horror.
Ah, excellent.
Oh, nice.
Love horror.
Well, we will follow the creaky, ominous door. So next scene here. The door creaks ominously as you step into the dimly lit foyer of the mansion. A chilling draft whispers through the air. A grand staircase looms before you, each step groaning with secrets. To your left, a portrait's eye seems to follow you, and a ghostly cat flickers in and out of existence down a shadowy corridor. You have three choices here. You can explore the grand staircase. The ornate staircase beckons you upward, promising hidden rooms and forgotten stories. You can converse with the portrait. Drawn to the eerie portrait, you feel a strange compulsion to communicate with it. Or you can follow the ghostly cat. The ethereal cat seems to know the mansion's secrets, guiding you down a path less traveled.
Ghost cat. Definitely.
Tell us about
love
this.
Ghosts,
tell us about
cats.
This choice.
You love ghosts. Obvious. And you love cats.
I love ghosts and I love cats. This is obviously the best.
Oh my God.
Right.
Okay. Let's follow the ghostly cat. The ghostly cat leads you down a labyrinth of corridors into the depths of the mansion. The air grows colder and heavier with each step. In a dimly lit underground chamber, you find an ancient altar. As you approach the altar, the cat explodes in dark energy, engulfing the room in a feeling of malevolence.
Ooh.
You hear the cat's last whisper. You are now a prisoner of the mansion, doomed to roam its haunted halls forever.
Awesome. Wait, I get to stay with the cat? I win because I get to stay in the haunted mansion with the ghost cat.
You definitely got a game over screen. I don't know. Well, let's talk about it. I mean, let's talk a little bit about, you know, what these, how you've engaged in this field and, you know, all the storytelling that we just talked about. Like, why immersive theater? How did you get involved in this? Why is it something you're sort of driven by?
Yeah. Oh,
can I backtrack a little bit?
Sure.
No, I already asked the question.
No.
Can't go back.
Can you explain to the audience or people that might be listening what immersive theater is?
Yeah.
And yeah.
How that might be different from theater, like
absolutely.
Plays.
Absolutely. So I think of immersive art forms as being, the thing that they have in common is that they're somewhere on these axes of intersection of the thing that I think of as kind of game, so mechanics and ways and rules of engaging with things, and agency, like the participant's agency and like what kind of control they have over the choices that they make and whether those choices have meaning. And then an immersive environment, right? Like a physically transformative space in some way. And so things can fall anywhere on those scales, but if they kind of fall within each of these spectrums, then you are probably looking at something that is in the immersive kind of category or space.
So why immersive theater? So, you know, it has all these different features that you just talked to us about. Why is it something that you've sort of been drawn to and gotten involved in?
Oh, gosh, that's a great question. I can't not do it is the best answer that I can give you. You know how some kids on the playground, like, sit there and, like, play with the flowers, and then those kids end up being horticulturalists, and then some kids do, you know, I was the kid who was like, look out, the shredder's coming, everyone, we gotta prepare. You know, like, I have always been creating participatory games for people.
Yeah.
And I don't know how to not do it.
I like that. So you just pointed out something that I hadn't really, we've had a few conversations now that I hadn't really, you know, focused on before. And that is this idea of, it's about building something for other people. And I think that's really interesting, right? Like, we could talk to you or other guests about what it's like to perform in immersive theater or to be involved in theater. In fact, we did in a recent episode. Mm-hmm. But, you know, what you just said is something about the thing that's driving you is the opportunity to create experiences for others.
Yeah.
Which I think is really cool.
Yeah, yeah. And it's this sharing of experience and the transmission of experience between people, which I find to be mysterious and magical and wonderful.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I loved that Shredder came into this
conversation. It's nice. Yeah.
I know. Shout out to Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, so you mentioned, you know, we talked about like creating these experiences for others. And obviously, you could give entire semesters long classes and lectures and workshops about how to do this properly. But can you talk a little bit about, you know, what are some of the key features? What are some of the key kind of components of how you create those immersive experiences?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think of it in terms of like, storytelling. So in storytelling, we often think of, we have, you know, characters and they have relationships and then we have a setting, and those things create events and plot and happenings, right?
Yeah.
And in an immersive sort of setting, you have characters and relationships and setting, but you also have this kind of interaction mechanics, right? You have ways that you can engage in the world, and that makes a really, really big difference. So there's ways for you to participate, be part of the action, be involved in what's going on, and be in the spotlight and in the center of attention. And knowing when to kind of be in that center of attention and when to let other people be in the center of attention is a huge part of the form.
Maybe related to that, what do you feel like is like a main inspiration for designing an immersive experience? Because I heard you mention character, setting, relationships, and I see all of them as pretty fertile ground for a story to form.
Yeah.
So is there a space where you feel like you get the most inspiration from? Is it a character that you're trying to imagine in your head that you're like, yeah, this is what usually drives me? Or is it an artifact like, I used to really like Leonardo girls, and that's going to drive how I think about these ideas? I'm just wondering, like, where do you get your inspiration from?
Myself, I'm a very aesthetic designer. Mm-hmm. So aesthetic in the term that we use it in game design, where aesthetic is about emotion and it's about conveying an emotion and allowing people to experience the emotion that you're trying to kind of convey. So I tend to have a feeling that I want other people to experience. And then I design scenarios that I think will best transmit that feeling in the most clear and understandable way.
Ooh, I like that. I didn't think about that.
Yeah.
Because I was just thinking about how even in writing, I was like, okay, character setting, you know, I have my things. But I love the idea that you're thinking about an emotion that you want to convey and bring to light.
Yeah, that is a very, that's really cool. And that is, I'm glad you mentioned sort of the game design aspect, right? Because you could go the other direction. You could start with kind of mechanics. I have this thing that looks kind of interesting. I want to sort of see what I can do with it.
Yeah.
Rather than coming from the direction you are, which is like, how should it feel?
Right.
and then I can figure out the things to do to kind of make that happen. Yeah,
exactly. And it's there's no wrong approach to how to do it, you know? So I just think that like there's no wrong way to approach design. And well, actually, that's not true. There's plenty of wrong ways to approach design. But I think that there's if you look at this dichotomy, this false dichotomy between mechanics and aesthetics, I think that you get really caught up in that minutia.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, these are systems that work perfectly together, and they can and should be partners, not enemies.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Not designing one or the other. I'm going to take us into a specific instantiation of this. I think it's always useful to have kind of an artifact to talk around. And so, you know, obviously one reason that we first started connecting and conversing was because of this Star Wars Galactic Star Cruiser experience that you had such an important hand in creating. And then Haney and I had a chance to experience. What about that? So thinking about like the emotions or the feelings, you know, as you are engaging in the design process behind that, what were some of the things you were trying to, you know, allow participants to experience in that event? And then maybe if you're able to talk a little bit about like, what are some of the moves you made or, or, you know, advice you gave to the actors or things that you did on the set to try to kind of bring those about?
Yeah. So it's such a, it was such an interesting challenge because the audience size is so large.
Yeah.
And there are so many diverting paths and there are lots of constraints of design, right? We have like, you know, we're in a theatrical environment that is highly professional. We have you know, certain things that are absolutely expectations that guests are coming in with. There are experiences that every guest is entitled to. And then there are other experiences that you may find or that you may stumble across. And finding avenues for people to be able to kind of raise their hands for those things was something that was a huge collaborative effort with the team. So, you know, the way that the Imagineers were working with the immersive experience directors, the way that we were working with the actors, like this was just all a wildly collaborative effort that happened. I can give an example of like some of the design thinking. So, there was the idea that we wanted to have, there was a luggage arrived at a certain point, and there was this idea that like there should be something like sort of mysterious about this luggage and something cool about this luggage, but it also had to be a collaborative activity. It also had to forward some character beats in an interesting way. It also had to teach people a little bit about how to use their data pad. And so...
Ooh, I struggle with
you struggle with the data pad.
Yes.
Yeah, it's it, like the if you don't kind of build tutorials into your system and you just expect people to figure out, it can be really hard.
Yeah.
So, so of course, I'm a game designer, so I was like, let's make a puzzle. And then I was like, what is the simplest, you know, third grade level puzzle that we can put on stage that will allow people to collaboratively do something, physicalize something, use the data pad, have some interactions with characters and like make these things happen. So designing that was part of it was process of, you know, talking to a lot of other people involved, talking to other designers, you know, creating the scenario and then teaching it to actors, right? And like making sure that they understand the goals of the experience and the goals of the education and not just the, a lot of times actors like want to know the why, right? Their focus is the motivation of their character and why their character is doing the scene. Mm. And you're like, you're doing it because you're teaching the guests how to do it, which is not a great character motivation, right? So there's also a collaborative process with the actor where they can be like, oh, I can maybe supply some motivation here. It could be because this or this or this. Awesome. And then you can figure that out with people in a collaborative sense.
Mm. I mean, there's so much level of uncertainty and risk in that, right?
Yeah.
Like I can imagine if I was an actor, because this happens even when I teach, right? Like I just don't know what I'm going to expect or how people are going to react to a provocation or a question or something. And you just get like all sweaty and you're like, oh my God, is anyone going to say anything? You know, and I think that's such a risky position for someone who's like acting or facilitating any kind of immersive space, right? Not just Star Cruiser, but any immersive space is such a big risk as a facilitator, right?
Yeah.
There's definitely a lot of, I don't want to say savvy, but something, intuition. Is it all intuitive? Like, what kind of skills or conditions do you actually need to facilitate experiences like this? And I think this relates to educators too.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there are some very teachable skills. So I have a training course where I kind of like go through technique, like specific technique. And I break this down into physical techniques, mental techniques, emotional techniques, like social and emotional techniques.
Yeah.
And then sort of like miscellaneous techniques of like, okay. And then also techniques for like how to get out of Dodge if things are going badly.
Yeah. Totally.
And those are based on like psychological frameworks of like, okay, here are the dark arts of how to manipulate people. Please only ever use this for good. You know, but it's important to know, because if you're dealing with an irritable person, then
yeah.
if you can de-escalate that situation quickly, then mm-hmm. awesome. You can yeah. continue your scene. So an example of like technique that is physical is understanding things about your body in space and other people's body in spaces. And so being able to include people by using space to your advantage.
Yeah.
So there's this great technique called triangulation. And with triangulation, you find someone who is you know, far away from you, and you make eye contact with them and you speak to them. And then you find somebody who's at a 90 degree angle, and you make eye contact with them, and they're closer to you, and you include them, and now everybody in the space in between has been included. So mm-hmm. now I, as an actor, I don't have to exhaust myself by making eye contact with everybody.
You.
And I'm not like scanning, I'm landing my intentions on the right person.
Yeah.
And still using that technique of understanding physical space to include people. So there are like, that's one of like the, you know, dozens of examples of like specific technique. Some of these things like seem really obvious to people, but they're not always. So
yeah.
I teach a technique called noticing. And noticing is when you notice something about another person and then say it out loud. So you can be like, wow, you have really beautiful blue eyes.
Thank you.
See? And then and it makes you feel so good. But like, especially if it's something that somebody likes about themselves.
Yeah.
And you can usually see what the things are that people like about themselves. People put that on display. So people kind of assume that everyone is already complimenting everybody about things, but that's not true in reality. Usually people don't notice things about each other. And so getting noticed makes you feel awesome and makes you feel really included. So, you know, teaching this as a technique for like social skills is something that is applicable, you know, obviously not just in immersive theater, but in every facet of education and life.
I was fluttering my eyelashes just for the waiting to be noticed.
I mean, to play devil's advocate,
please.
This is a question for both of you. What if you don't like getting noticed?
So there's we also can teach like the catch and release technique, right? So you can pretty much notice immediately if somebody is not vibing with what you're putting down. Some people really just don't, they don't want to play with you. So we teach actors to just kind of leave the door open. You come up to somebody, you make eye contact, try to start a little conversation with them. They're like, no. You can see their body posture shut down.
Yeah.
My cohort, Jen Bascom, would say they become pretzel arm guests, right? They fold in on themselves. And in that case, you just let the person know that you find them fascinating, you'd love to talk to them, and you have to go. You'll see them around. So you've left the door open. Yeah. They can approach you if they want to, but they don't have to.
Yeah, I think that's really important.
Yeah.
Right? Because I think about how, I don't know, sometimes you want to be involved, sometimes you don't want to be involved. And I feel like even having the choice to decide for yourself is also a part of the agency.
Definitely.
It, right? And I think about what hard work that idea of being a facilitator is, right? It's like you could have all these skills, but at the end of the day, you really have to be attuned to people, right? And have some kind of sense of like empathy and care and consideration for how people are entering a space. And I feel like that's really hard work.
Yeah. Yeah. It also is making me think of how it's such a fine line, right? Because a little nudging is important, right? Because that you mentioned the sort of the catch and release. There still has to be a catch moment.
Right.
There still has to be that part where you open the door.
Absolutely.
And, you know, knowing the extent to which you can kind of push on that and make the person maybe slightly uncomfortable, or at least let them know you're there for, you know, for that conversation or that opportunity to play. Knowing the degree to which you can do that and still back off and still sort of leave that door open. That seems like a really hard, you know, it seems like something you really do have to work at a lot.
Yeah. Identifying where there are boundaries that are flexible and or walls that are not. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
It can be really that discernment is something that can take some time. And also, I do think that while people who kind of are naturally inclined to social emotional skills excel at this work, it can be taught. These are things that you can practice and skill up in and get really good at no matter who you are. Just like you can get really good at drawing even if you're not naturally skilled at drawing.
Yeah, I'm curious, Haney, I want to invite you in on that too, because I think this was in our Star Cruiser experience. We had this range of people in our group of four that had different levels of how much they wanted to go in.
Right.
And also the extent to which we did or did not go in to the experience, like once we were there. And I think I would put myself in sort of a mostly on a let's play and let's play hard mode. Not fully. There was a lot of people that played a lot harder than me, but as you can imagine. But you know, I was like, yeah, I want to try to play. I want to try to role play with this character. And so there were times where I would still feel really nervous to do it. And I would like kind of stand back. But so many times the actors would kind of do just what you described. They give you like a little opening.
Right.
And then you would kind of, I want to play too. And then you sort of stumble into it and you kind of have fun after that.
Yeah.
But I don't know that you had the same experience, right? Like I feel like if I could characterize it, is like you kind of were down to play, but there was a sense of crossing that threshold was a challenge.
Yeah. I'm sure that as you're designing this, you're probably thinking about the ends of the spectrum. Right, of people who enter into the experience, right? Like the person that is like really positively inclined to it and the person that's like pretzel armed, as you say.
Right.
So how do you think about those two experiences and how do you scaffold that, I guess? Yeah.
So in the immersive design industry, we have some kind of like terminology that we use for how, like the kind of different ways that people interact. So we think of things in terms of, and this is just one framework. There are actually many frameworks for this. So the framework that I am going to talk about now is the like kind of level of immersion. So we think of it as sunbathers. Sunbathers are kind of here to watch and just chill. There are waiters, which sounds like what you are, Haney. A waiter is like they want to get in the water, but they're not really sure, and they're cold. It's too cold. They're in there. Their ankles are in, and they're like, "I'm doing it, kind of."
They see Nathan flailing in the water, and like, "Well, he looks dumb. I'm not going all the way in."
And then we got swimmers, which is that sounds like what you are, Nathan.
Yeah.
So the swimmers are, you know, quite proficient in the water already. They can get themselves into the immersive side of the pool and no problem. And then there are divers who are like, the swimming is not enough. I'm going to explore a whole new world at the bottom of the ocean. And you're like,
yeah.
Go for it. That's awesome. So generally speaking, we try to focus different storylines and different like actors on different levels of immersion.
Oh, interesting.
So you'll want to kind of create things that are scaled for different types of players. So one of the things that was like a fun and interesting design challenge was this feedback that we would get from waiters quite a bit of, I didn't know how to play, and it seemed like other people had information that I didn't have.
That's me.
So what am I doing wrong? And like, and there was a lot of like self-recrimination.
Yeah, right.
And a lot of like, you know, maybe I'm just bad at this or I'm terrible or something. And it's like, no. There's, you know, there are, I think, different approaches to this. And I think that's something that we're still kind of trying to crack that nut a little bit in the industry
is,
how do we ensure that the waiters are invited in to swim? Because we see them in the water and we're like, okay, you're fine. You're good, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that there's part of this is like maybe activating those diver players, right? Mm-hmm. So the divers are players. So if another player had come up to you and been like, oh my goodness, the Force just sent me a message and you and I have to work together on this thing, that probably would have been a different sort of invitation. Like if you knew that it was a player playing with you and not an actor who is managing a lot of time and managing people and you're like, oh, I feel like I'm waiting in line to kind of get my turn with them. But if other players were like, hey, I have a secret mission for you.
Yeah.
I think that feels different.
That's a great point, actually.
That's super great,
I remember, you know, when we went to that cargo room, I only went because you forced me to go.
I'm excellent at that.
Or else I would have gone straight to the bar and gotten another margarita. So I feel like I wouldn't have even been there if Nathan wasn't like, I just come with me to the cargo. I think the engaging other players to figure out how they can scaffold, because I think about that same thing with classrooms, right?
Like, yeah,
the teacher isn't the only one that has some agency and facilitating power to think about those relationships.
Absolutely.
And there are ways that happened on the Star Cruiser where I would call this a mechanic. I don't think it would necessarily, I don't know if this counts as a mechanic in the game designer sense, but you know, I would notice Rafe, is that that was the character's name, the scoundrel's name? He would often be like, okay, we need to distract somebody. You know, I need you to go distract that character over there. And then I need you to like be on guard over here. Mm-hmm. And so there were ways in which the actor was trying to get us involved in the story that was going on. It was a kind of a simplistic mechanic. Go do distraction is like kind of a simple, go over there and play. But what would happen was sometimes one of those players would see a Haney or see a me and be like, hey, we're going to distract the stormtroopers, come with us. And so that thing you just talked about, they were activating each other. And then it felt like that cool kind of collaborative experience that you were having with other players, exactly, which is kind of the sweet spot, right?
And I think I know what scene you're talking about specifically, where that scene is in a super time crunch. If that scene was not crunched for time, then what that actor would be doing instead would be like, here's the goal. Does anyone have ideas for how we could do this goal?
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then like people,
which he does
at
other
ideas.
Times. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then other people would offer ideas and that would be like, you're a genius. But like celebrating what the guest is proposing, right?
Yeah.
So creating space, like opening those opportunities for like, okay, here's what we all want to accomplish together. Who has ideas for how we accomplish it? Mm. And that's also something that teachers use constantly in classrooms, right? Like, okay, we have this learning goal. How do we want to approach it?
Mm. I mean, I appreciate that there's lingering questions that I think the community is also just asking for themselves, right?
Yeah.
Because I feel like in these last few months that I've been thinking about role-playing, live-action role-play, just different kinds of games, and what it means for people's community and belonging and social connection, like, I think that is really powerful, right? Like, I have seen that happen at Star Cruiser, right, where people are, like, literally in tears because of, not just because of the story, but because of the community and the sense of belonging that they feel in that space and the emotion that they have gotten from, like, a giant cement box, right? But I, you know, and then on the other hand too, I appreciate that, like, you know, you have these waiters who look like they're trying something, and it might look like they're trying, but maybe they're just putting in a toe and being like, I don't like that, right? And so thinking about the question of like, how do we get them to be here? And that's still like a question that the community still needs to pursue, right?
Yeah.
And so I think that's a very balanced way of thinking about any kind of experience, right? That it could be so powerful and great, but it also has things to work on
still,
and think through.
Still needs tweaking.
Yeah.
Nothing is ever finished.
What?
There were so many cool moves and that the stories and the actors and also the space do, I think. And we've you know, offline, Haney and I have talked about this a lot. You just mentioned the sort of ways in which they seem to align with stuff good teachers know how to do. I mean, another one that comes to mind is, you mentioned the sort of inviting people to give ideas and then celebrating their ideas. Another one that definitely happened was the debrief at the end, which is like, what did we just do?
Yeah.
Tell us a little, tell me what you did. And then they invite people to sort of tell their stories about what they did, which is sort of this kind of reflection moment, which is certainly a really important, powerful kind of teacher move or you know, educational design move. So to create opportunities to kind of value those experiences.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not, there's no question here. Just like, I feel like seeing the ways in which the work that happens in the immersive theater space has some interesting alignment and overlap with the kind of work that it is that a teacher is doing is kind of compelling and interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I have a question. Can we have a Kardashian summer immersive experience? Is that possible?
Yeah, so
it sounds like you just made it. So I think it's on. Created. Tell us about the Kardashian summer experience. As a player, what do I get to do?
The reason why I brought it up was because I think I was thinking about our Star Cruiser experience, and I'm thinking about any immersive experience, right? Like we went to Sleep No More not that long ago, and I was thinking, gosh, if I just had like a little tiny bit more background information, maybe my experience of it would be better.
I know everything there. I know a lot about Star, not everything. I know a lot about Star, so it's easy for me to jump into that world.
And so I feel like I went there even to Sleep No More, and I was like, what am I supposed to be doing here? I'm not sure. I just went up and down the stairs like a million times, right? So
like a workout.
Yeah, but I didn't see any bloody hands either. So so I feel like, you know, there was some background knowledge that was missing for me, and I was just thinking to myself. I didn't actually think that to myself. I thought this out loud to the group that I went to Star Cruiser with, but I was like, would you guys have the same emotional experience if I was like, we are going on a 2-day immersive experience that's about us being in Calabasas, California, and we have to stop the paparazzi from crowding on the Kardashian Jenners, and so we have to go and sit there and spy on them.
Yeah.
Shoo out the paparazzi.
I'm out.
Yeah. And so I wonder, like,
but there's an audience for that, right? That's the beauty of the form, is that it's like someone like someone going to a LARP that they didn't like. And it would be as though they had seen one film ever that was not a good film.
Right.
And they were like, I hate film.
Films are bad.
Film is bad. And you're like, all of it?
Yeah.
Really?
Yes. Yeah. That's an excellent point.
Yeah.
So, but what, I mean, because I think that's obviously the answer, right? But I think the sub question here is, what role is played by the culture and the context of the thing you're designing?
Yeah.
So in this case of Star Wars, there's kind of this built-in cultural knowledge that I show up with all of it, you know?
Right.
And that also, to your point earlier about like the tutorials and easing me into the world, like a lot of that stuff is done for you because I already come knowing certain things.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Whereas for Haney, which by the way, I didn't know anything about what coaxium is like, but like Haney hears the word coaxium and she's like, what the hell is this? I don't know anything about this. Whereas I'm like, coaxium, I don't know. It sounds Star Wars-y, I'll figure it out.
Right.
So like, and likewise, if we were at the Kardashian LARP or immersive experience, you would show up and know the names of all the characters and I would be like, okay, this is... So like, what role is played by...
I'm going to have a martini.
I would be like, back to the bar for me. Exactly. I'm not going to the cargo hold with you and Courtney.
Shout out to the bartenders.
But like, what role is played by that? Like that, is that important? Is that something that's easy for you to build on if they don't have it?
Like, so I think this is probably best answered by like a story, which is that in one of the first ever kind of like theatrical immersive experiences that I put on, I had no onboarding whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
I had like people waited in line to get into the venue, and I had a bunch of interactive characters just go out and start like interacting with them and like working the line and doing stuff. And people were like, what the heck is going on? You know, they were like confused.
Yeah.
Didn't understand, you know, like some of them were really into it, but those who weren't were like, oh, someone's talking to me. A clown is talking to me. I don't like it. You know? Mm. So then I learned that there was a step in the process of like onboarding. So cool. So we had we modified the design so that people would come in and they'd encounter some of these characters. And then once they encountered these characters, they then hit somebody who, just before they walk into the venue, goes, hi, do you know who you are and why you're here? Do you understand what's going on and why you're here? And some people are like, yes, great, cool. Go into the experience.
Yeah.
And other people are like, no, I don't. It's like, awesome. Here's a chart. Look up your birthday and the, you know, thing, and that'll give you a personality trait. And then this is who you are now for the rest of
life.
And that helped give people an in and like an alibi and like a way to get attached to the story in a way that was meaningful and helpful for them.
Mm.
So, and then finding the difference in the audience interaction between the non-onboarding show and the onboarded show. Vast, right?
Mm.
Because
I'm sure,
anyone who wanted to sunbathe was sunbathing, but there were no waiters because everyone who wanted to play got the opportunity to do so.
Mm. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. This is cool. This has been a really fun. I mean, I feel like there's all these ideas that we have as we've kind of engaged in this question of role playing and playing roles. I feel like there's all these like ideas that are existing across the different conversations. Something that seems really hard to me in immersive theater is you're trying to create an opportunity for me to play roles.
Yeah.
Which feels so different than like what an actor does when they're trying to sort of play in different roles.
Right.
I guess, you know, the question is sort of like, why is this worth doing? Like, say a little bit about the different possibilities that this type of art form kind of enable than maybe other types of art forms might.
Yeah. So I think that there's something very special about this art form that has to do with the amount of agency that people have and the physical embodiment of being someone else or playing a different role.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And physicalizing that and then getting to experience meaningful agency can create wildly transformative outcomes for people. Mm. And by transformative, I mean mind changing or mind expanding.
Mm-hmm.
And for some reason, this format, those elements are so essential for it.
Like, yeah.
And this format does it extraordinarily well because you have the embodiment aspect of it and you have the agency aspect of it.
Yeah.
So it's like a shortcut hack to like getting people to have really transformational experiences.
Mm.
That's cool. This notion of embodiment also keeps coming up. And I think it's so key. It's so core to all of this.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's also something that we're all thinking a lot about post-pandemic, where so many of our interactions were not embodied.
Mm.
Yeah.
And then you start to miss that part of it.
Totally.
Mm. You take it for granted.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, we like to end our episodes with a segment called What's Poppin'. And What's Poppin' is basically we like to hear from our guests what is out in pop culture, whether it's a movie, a media form, a book, a game, a design, I don't know, whatever.
What are you into? Whatever. What's poppin' for you?
That other people should engage with or that you want people to know about.
So I am notoriously terrible at pop culture. But if you want like esoteric, like
that works
strange
too.
Strange ideas too. About yes. things that are fun. So let's see, what am I doing right now? I just started playing Baldur's Gate 3.
Oh my God.
Keeps that coming
my
up.
My husband Neil, he plays it constantly. Sorry, shout out to Neil.
Shout out to Neil. What's up, Neil? Fellow Baldur's Gate 3 player. So Baldur's Gate 3 is a dating sim that is disguised as an action RPG.
That is so true.
Yeah.
Okay, I don't even know that much about it, but I kind of am laughing because I've heard those lines.
It's so true.
Yes.
So true.
Yes, because all of your interactions with these characters are like, you're just trying to romance them.
Yeah.
And anyone who disagrees is sadly wrong. So,
am I in love with this angry lizard?
Right.
Or is the giant with a heart of gold more my cup of tea?
Exactly.
Do I want to try to be with the vampire? Or with this, like, evil alien chick?
Sorry,
I don't know.
I need to go home and
it's good.
This
it's good stuff.
Right.
It's so good.
Anyway, thank Great. You so much for joining us on this episode of Confessionals.
Yeah, it's been super great talking to you and learning. I feel like I've learned so much from our conversations, including the one we had today. So thank you for making time for
us. Thank you so much for having me. This was absolutely lovely.
Pop and Play is produced by Haney Yoon, Nathan Holbert, Lalitha Vasudevan, Billy Collins, and Joe Rena Ferry at Teachers College, Columbia University with the Digital Futures Institute. Audio recording for this episode by Moira McCavanaugh. This episode was edited by Billy Collins and Adrian Vitullo.
For a transcript and to learn more, visit tc.edu/popandplay. Our music is selections from Leaf Eaters by Poddington Bear, used here under a Creative Commons Attribution non-commercial license. Blake Danzig provided our social media and outreach support. Follow at Pop and Play Pod on Instagram and TikTok for more of What's Poppin', like the trashies with Ioana Litterat. Thank you to Meyer Clark and Abu Abdelbaghi for support with our website and additional materials. And thanks to you for listening.